ओम भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're continuing our reading from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12, entitled Rahugana Converses with Jad Bharata. Text 13. Yatro tama shloka guna anavadaha prastuyate gramya katha vighataha nishevyamano Anurinam Humukshur Matin Satim Yatshati Vasudeve Yatro Tamashloka Gunanavada Rastu Yate Gramya Katavigataha Nishevyamano Anurinam Humukshur Mating setting yachati vasudeve Yatra tamasloka gunanavada Rastuyate gramya katavigataha Nishevyamano nurinang mumukshur Mating setting yachati vasudeve Yatro tamashloka gunanavada Rastu yate gramya katavigataha Nishevyamano nurinang mumukshur Mating satin yachati vasudeve Please chant. Vaishnavis? Yatro tama shloka gunanavada Rastu yate Nishevyamano nurinang mumukshur Mating satin yachati vasudeve Anyone else? Okay, synonyms. Yatra. In which place? Parenthetically, in the presence of exalted devotees. Uttama Shloka Guna Anuvadaha. Discussion of the pastimes and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prastuyate is presented. Gramyakata Vigataha. Due to which there is no chance of talking of worldly matters. Nishevyamanaha, being heard very seriously. Anurinam, day after day. Mumukshaho, of persons who are very serious about getting out of material entanglement. Matim, meditation. Satim, pure and simple. Yachati is turned. Vasudeve onto the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? In an assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. In an assembly of pure devotees, there is discussion only of the qualities, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full attention. In the association of pure devotees, by constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the Absolute Truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudeva. Please repeat. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? In an assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. In an assembly of pure devotees, there is discussion only of the qualities, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full attention. In the association of pure devotees, by constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the Absolute Truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudeva. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The symptoms of pure devotees are described in this verse. The pure devotee is never interested in material topics. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has strictly prohibited his devotees to talk about worldly matters. Gramya Varta na Kahibe. One should not indulge in talking unnecessarily about news of the material world. One should not waste time in this way. This is a very important feature in the life of a devotee. A devotee has no other ambition than to serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Krishna consciousness movement was started to engage people 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord and in His glorification. The students in this institution engage in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness from 5 in the morning to 10 at night. They actually have no opportunity to waste their time unnecessarily by discussing politics, sociology, and current events. These will go their own way. A devotee is concerned only with serving Krishna positively and seriously. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshtarne Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Panamami Hari Pre Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kripasu Nubhi Evacha Matitanang Pavanebhyo Vaisyavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So although Srila Prabhupada and the verse spoken by Jadbhart is emphasizing that we don't really need to be so aware of what's going on out there, still, you know, we have a calendar and we tend to be interested in knowing what each day is, what if there's some special event on the calendar, especially those who go out and attend the Sirid books. It's nice to know what's going on. So yesterday was Thanksgiving, and Shukadev Prabhu nicely led us in remembering why we should be thankful. But today there's also some significance on the calendar. On the Vaishnava calendar, it is the actual day of the advent of the Bhagavad Gita. So we can maybe say a few words on that. But on the regular calendar, it is called Black Friday. Who knows why it's called Black Friday? Why is it called Black Friday? Our newest devotee in the community is being very, very smart here. Yeah, you could say everything is related to Lord Jagannath. But amongst the non-devotees, it's called Black Friday because this is a day when merchants, the materialistic vaishyas, this is when their books start going into the black from in the red. All year long, supposedly they're in the red because they're selling at a loss. Nobody's really shopping that much. But the day after Thanksgiving, up through Christmas, is when all the shopping happens, practically in this country. And therefore, the books turn from red, meaning negative, to black, meaning positive. So people on this day perform great austerities. Our local Best Buy, for instance, they have what they call door buster deals, you know, really, really low prices on certain items, but they only have a limited quantity. So they open for sales at 5 in the morning, but at 3 a.m. they start handing out coupons for the most popular, lowest priced items, which means people start lining up before midnight to get. So they're performing great austerity to go out and buy some electronic item or something for the home. If we ask them to rise early and come here from Mangalarchik at 4:30, forget that. But to get up at midnight to go stand in line to get a coupon at 3 a.m. to start shopping at 5 a.m., that makes sense. A lot of sense. After all, I'll save hundreds of dollars on my Christmas presents, etc., etc. So, this verse today is putting us in the right frame of mind. Putting us in the right frame of mind. Taking us back from this madness. Nunang pramata kurte karma. The material world in general, but especially in the Kali Yuga, is full of madness. Because people forget what the real goal of life is, the real aim of life. They don't remember, or don't want to remember, or they don't want to be reminded of the fact that no matter how many large screen TVs you buy, and how many nice vehicles you buy, and how many nice homes you have, still, death will come knocking one day. And that day, we don't know when it can come. At any moment, it can come. We remember the overall picture of the Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, who has been given notice that he will die in 7 days. But we don't have that luxury of knowing exactly when death will come. So we have to be serious. So, this verse starts out with a question. It starts out with a question. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? So mention where? Jadbhart is speaking. And yesterday, Shukadev had the benefit of the seminal verse of this section of the Bhagavatam. The main verse around which this whole pastime revolves, Rahuganaita Tapasanayati. This verse, Jadbhart is speaking to King Rahugana, therefore it starts at Rahuganaita. So, the point of that verse was that no matter what you do, not by tapasya, not by taking sannyas, not by properly fulfilling your grihastha obligations, not by being severely austere, staying out in the sun, surrounded by fire during the summertime, or standing to your neck in cold water in the wintertime. These austerities and these other practices will not bring you necessarily the result. So what was the result that he was speaking about? What was the result that he was saying you cannot obtain by these methods? What was that result? The goal of all that? Knowledge of the absolute truth. So he said the only way to get this knowledge of the absolute truth is Maha Raja Bhishekam. Maha Pado Raja Bhishekam. You have to take dust, Abhishek, bath in the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotees. So that now he's saying, who are those pure devotees? How do you recognize one? Whose dust should I be taking, in other words? Where should I go to get access to this absolute truth? So he's giving here one symptom. Now there are a long list of the qualities of pure devotees. We know in the next devotion, there's a list of 26 qualities. But Jadbar here is making it easy for us. First symptom that you can look for, and actually you should start looking for in yourself if you're serious about coming back to the platform of pure existence, is in an assembly of pure devotees, there's no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. So we can all do that check. How much are we still interested in these subjects? Politics, movies, dance, this, that. It seems like there's so many subjects that I can be attracted to out there. And that's also mentioned by Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning of the second canto. Shrota Vyadini Rajanja Nanang Shanti Sahasrasa. That there are thousands and thousands of topics that the non-devotees are attracted to. And we know, here are a few listed. Sociology, politics, you know, anthropology, this-ology, that-ology. The actual ology, that suffix means, it's a science. Anthropology. You know, it means there's a science. But science means that you know the subject matter that you're presenting, not that you're still guessing. If you're guessing, like in the realm of religion, Prabhupada said right here in his garden, to be a theologian, one who can present the science of religion or the science of God emphatically, that means you have to know what you're talking about. You can't be guessing. If you're still guessing, then you're a theosophist. You're still looking. You're not a theologian if you don't know the subject that you're presenting. But this is what passes as science out there. Recently, I was watching a DVD that Narantara gave me because once some people came here, they were making a DVD about religion. So they contacted me, actually, and I said, well, who would be a good candidate? So I suggested Narantara, and he accepted. So they came here to the temple. They interviewed him for like a half an hour on tape. But he was too pure and clear for them. So in the final product, he only has like a few seconds. But all these other, you know, Swami this and, you know, Swami that and this person, that person, they had like lots of time. The whole thing was more than an hour long in the final DVD. So, tellingly, they interviewed this professor from UCLA. I think his name is David Siegel. He's actually a psychologist. And he was saying that he actually woke up one day and he was thinking that here I'm in the field of psychology and there's so many psychologists out there, but psychology is dealing with the mind. How many of them even know what the mind is? So he decided to conduct a study. He had a seminar that was attended by like 100 or more psychologists, and he asked them, you're in the field of psychology, which deals with the mind. Do you know, or can you state concisely, what is the mind? And 96% of them said flatly no. So here they are, they're supposed to be mental health professionals. So then the next question he asked them was, what is real mental health? You're supposedly trying to give people real mental health, bringing them back to normal mental health. Can you define concisely what is real mental health? And again, the vast majority of them said no. So this is cheating mentality. You're supposed to be a professional in the field of mental health. You don't know what is the mind. You can't give a clear definition. And you can't give a clear definition of what is normal mental health. So these people are cheaters. This is exactly what Prabhupada and our parampara, the cyclic succession, is railing against constantly, that the world is full of cheaters. In the name of professionals, they're cheating. They don't even know the field that they're supposed to be professionals in. They can't give you the basic understanding of what it is. They throw out all these big terms and, you know, like this and that. But when you get right down to nitty-gritty, the emperor is not wearing any clothes. They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. So this is not the case in the line that we have the privilege of being attached to or supposed to be attached to. These personalities know what they're talking about. You may accept or not accept. You may agree or not agree. But they are presenting a very clear philosophy of life. And that begins with understanding that there is a supreme source of everything. The absolute truth. The absolute truth means the supreme source of everything. You cannot have an infinite regression of cause and effect. I have a father, he had a father, he had a father. But you go on back, there has to be an ultimate father of everyone. You cannot have an infinite regression of cause and effect. There has to be an ultimate source. So what is the nature of that ultimate source? Now, our modern scientific community says that the ultimate source of everything is matter. There's a material cause, ultimate material cause. Then along the line came Darwin, who gave his theory of the evolution of species, which the scientific community gradually jumped on. Now it's like the gospel, according to Darwin. But one of the big deficits in the Darwinian presentation is that we see so many complete material forms. Like you take the simplest flying insect, a fly or a dragonfly, something like that. It's a complete package. How do you go from some insect that had no wings to a perfect flying machine like a dragonfly? What would be the use of intermediate steps along the way? So for the longest while, they were stumped by this. And they should actually still say they're stumped by it. But now they're thinking that actually we've come up with some explanations. You take a stonefly. A stonefly is a little fly that in the larval stage is in the water, then it comes out and it lives mostly by the water. And it's so light that it can sit on the water. It doesn't even break the surface tension of the water. But obviously if you're an insect and you sit on the water too long, then some fish is going to come along and grab you. So they have wings and they fly away. So the scientists are now saying that if you take that stonefly and you cut off half of its wing and you put it back on the water, it's still able to move away. It can't fly anymore, but the wings propel it and it gets out of danger. And if you cut it down into just little nubs of wings, they can still do that. So this is giving us the clue that, you know, maybe when there was first just a little bit of a wing, you know, it helped the fly and somehow to escape danger, and therefore it kept growing and growing to the point where it could fly. So this is they think they've gotten over that conundrum of how it is we can wind up with such complete forms when the intermediate steps wouldn't have given any advantage. So this again is all just, it's all just speculation. So we're very fortunate to be privy to a body of knowledge that's not speculative. It's not speculative. Jadbard is saying, if you want to know the absolute truth, you must approach a pure devotee. And now he's giving symptoms of that pure devotee. What is a pure devotee? Pure devotees do not engage in Gramya Katha. They're not interested in politics, sociology, and all that. But then we see so many conversations where Srila Prabhupada is very much aware of what was going on in the day and time. He was very much aware of what was happening. But that's not, or was not, the thrust of his life. It was not the thrust of his interest. His interest is in Krishna. And Krishna means the source of everything. So tangentially, the devotee becomes knowledgeable about his guru. Bhaktisrila Bhaktisiddhanta was a great mathematician and very, very advanced personality in terms of knowledge. He was Shrutidhar, whatever he heard once, he remembered his entire life. So it's not that the devotees are oblivious, but it's not their thrust in life. They're not into gathering on street corners to discuss, you know, what the president said about this and that. And that's not their main thrust in life. Their main thrust in life is somehow or other get people interested in Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other. Now, our main thrust is to get them to take books like the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, as we know, means Song of God. So whatever God says directly, what could be higher knowledge than that? That's why the Bhagavad Gita is so important. But any way we can get them attracted, just like yesterday I was helping in the restaurant with the Thanksgiving feast. There's this very old woman, some of you may recognize her. So old, she's 90 years old, she says. She's bent over completely. She's completely attached to prasadam. She comes to the Sunday feast, I've been there several times, when she comes up 5 or 6 times to fill her plate. And if you give her any bit of a hard time, she will chew you out. She's a real heavy character. So yesterday she came, and she came up to the counter, and the first argument was, I was told that I only have to pay $10. Don't you dare try to get $15 out of me. So I told Gora, you know, Jagadish's daughter, just take the $10. Don't give her, because I know her. So took the $10, and then she went in, And she was loading up on everything. She was collecting, not loaf like anything. So Nam Kirtan came over and said, she's going overboard here. She said, I said, don't give her a hard time. The last thing you want to do is create a scene with a 90-year-old woman. Let her take whatever she wants. So finally she had enough. She went outside and she ate. And, but you can see at 90 years old, she may not be into reading Bhagavad Gita. As far as I know, she's not. But she's completely attached to prasadam. So imagine if she leaves her body thinking about prasadam, thinking about a Sunday feast. Guaranteed human birth. Guaranteed devotee birth. So this is the benefit of preaching Krishna consciousness. It's not that only by the books. Yes, the books are the basis and the main thrust of our preaching. But anyway, somebody's attracted. If they're attracted to the festivals, if they're attracted to the prasadam, if they're attracted to hearing the chanting, whatever they're attracted to. Just like we know we have our Iyengar who's been sitting down in Vrindavan now for decades chanting Hare Krishna. That's his main concentration. But he used to be here in the United States. He's an American by birth. And he used to chant in New York, going around with a truck, chanting in the subways, and chanting. So chanting is also attractive. It's not that only by the books. The books, again, are our main thrust. We'd like everybody, every household in America to have a full set of Prabhupada's books. But we see this Krishna consciousness is attractive in so many ways. So whatever a person is attracted to, they will make spiritual progress. They'll make spiritual progress. So we should not waste their time, as this verse is suggesting. In the purport, Prabhupada says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has strictly prohibited his devotees to talk about worldly matters. Gramya Bharata Nakahibe. So this is taken from a verse in the Madhya Leela where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, as we know, is a very learned person. But when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very humble. He said, the people in the village, they say I'm very learned, but I don't know who I am. Kami. Well, who am I? And why am I suffering the threefold miseries? So we should all ask that question seriously. Who am I? If I'm still thinking of myself in terms of this body and this mind, then I have a long way to go. If I'm still thinking that I'm Mexican or Jamaican or, you know, Croatian or whatever, I'm none of these things. Or Latvian, I'm none of these things. I'm actually a spirit soul. I'm not attached to any particular country or a particular family. These are all just designations. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to answer Sanatana Goswami's questions by telling him, Jivara Sarupahai Nityara Krishna Das. First of all, you should know, your original situation is that you're a jiva soul, eternal servant of Krishna. So then he goes on now to give him this instruction, where he said, Gramya Varta Nakaibe. He says, don't indulge in Gramya Katha. He said, you don't hear it and don't speak it. And then, in that same verse, he said, don't eat very nicely and don't dress very nicely. Those were the other instructions. But these are instructions to Sanatana Goswami. It doesn't mean that now we should go home and throw out all our nice clothes. No, because Prabhupada also instructed us to dress nicely. Mukunda Goswami tells a story when he was in London, Prabhupada was there, and there was one devotee who had to go deal with some legal matters with the city. And so he came before Prabhupada, he was dressed in a suit and tie, and Prabhupada very much appreciated it. He said, yes. He said, first dress, then address. So Prabhupada wanted us to dress very nicely, either a nice kurta, dhoti or sari, and nice tilak, or you can dress nice Western clothes, that's okay, based on the circumstance, but we should dress nicely. Prabhupada was not into this, you know, avadut look, you know, people wearing these rumpled clothes and torn and mismatched socks and this kind of thing. Prabhupada was not into that. He himself dressed very nicely. Prabhupada was also always nicely dressed. So he wanted us to dress nicely, because we're taking the Krishna consciousness out to the street. Now, in India still, people may appreciate some, you know, somebody walking around with torn clothing and, you know, even naked, the Nagababas, they wear no clothes. In India, that would fly, but here in LA, it wouldn't. You go outside naked, somebody will immediately call the cops and, you know, you're off to jail. So we don't want to present prematurely this avadut, you know, appearance, naked or disheveled clothing or stuff. Dress nicely. Nice kurta, nice dhoti, nice sari. Nice tilak especially. Prabhupada said, yes, you can dress in Western clothes, but always with the tilak and flag. He called a shika flag. You must have your flag and you must have your nice tilak. So, these are just some simple points being made that we can test ourselves. How much we're still interested in Gramya Katha. How much are we interested in politics, sociology, this, that? How much interest do we really have? Or are we gradually becoming more and more interested in the absolute truth as presented by perfect personalities like Srila Prabhupada? So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Okay. Oh, we have a question from... What is your name?
Surya Das.
Surya Das.
Surya.
Yes, Surya. Surya, the sun, yes. Okay, what is your question?
Well, no, I just wanted to make a comment because, like, you were mentioning psychology and all of that. And, you know, my dad's a Christian pastor. And one of his... They were just having discussions yesterday about Christianity and this and that. And one of the Christian devotees who's been a friend for 20 years is still on medications from doctors. And he's very depressed, and he's like been a Christian for 20 years. And almost on the verge of suicide. And you know, like, I'm just quiet about, you know, my own spiritual practice because I don't want to argue with my father. I'm humble about it. And I don't like, you know, I have respect for my elders. But, like, just seeing, like, the devotees here, and you're talking about psychology, and I'm not seeing many devotees who are on medications and on the verge of suicide who are properly following the Krishna path.
Okay.
Also, I just want to make one more comment. As my old AA sponsor, I went back to him, you know, because, you know, it helps in the society. There's so much alcohol and drug addiction. And he's talking about religion is bad, this and that. And, you know, he's very much like Buddhist. And, you know, he's trying to tell me not to come to the Krishna temple, you know, that, you know, people in India are drinking and all this. And I lived in India. And I didn't see very much drinking or drug using. And I know for a fact Krishna devotees aren't on alcohol and on drugs. So, you know, I'll still go maybe to an AA meeting here or there, but I know when I come here that the devotees are filled with love of God and they're not on alcohol and not on drugs. So, to me, the Krishna psychology works, and so I have to follow that truth. And even though I respect my elders, and if, you know, they've lost their way or they're confused, that's not my problem, because my heart's with Krishna.
Well said. So, the bottom line is, yes, first of all, save yourself. That's it. You can't save anybody else if you're, you know, if you're drowning in the ocean, you can't save another drowning person. So everybody's first responsibility is to save themselves. Now, you've come across and beginning to appreciate that the real psychology is Krishna, you're God, I'm not. We're all here in this material world to try to be God, to be imitation gods. And that's why people are depressed, ultimately. Because they've tried, like anything, lifetime after lifetime, and they're still in the same position. They're under the control of the modes of nature. And that's why they become depressed. That's the real root cause of depression. I want to be God, and no matter how hard I try, I can't be God. I'm not in control. And you can ask anybody. So many so-called gods out there. Right? I'm God, and I'm going to teach you how to be God. And then the rascal has to go to the dentist when he gets a toothache. What kind of God are you? That you have to go to the dentist. The real God doesn't have to go to the dentist. So this just pricks our, you know, ego that I'm thinking I'm God, but then I have to go to a dentist or a doctor or whatever. So this is the real root cause of depression. And the real cause of elation is service to Krishna. Because when you serve Krishna in this mood, this mentality that you're God and I'm not, and Krishna, who is the source of everything, means that he's also the source of happiness, he starts to fill you with happiness. It's not artificial. It's not the happiness that you get from popping something or smoking something. It lasts for a few minutes or a few hours and then you have to come down. And the psychology of intoxication is that when you go up, you come down lower than where you started out. And therefore, eventually you need more of your stuff to get high again. And that's a losing battle, that up and down stuff. So any intelligent person gets to the point where they realize it doesn't work, and therefore they become depressed again, because now what am I going to do? I've invested so much time and energy into getting high and the whole culture of intoxication, and it didn't work for me, so now I'm even more depressed. So the real thing to do is tell them, we have a natural high. Chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And I can speak from experience. I joined this movement in 1973 in New York. I approached a devotee on the street at a book table. But I didn't really stop for the books. I noticed he had some incense. And since I wasn't, you know, into some stuff at the time, I thought, okay, I'll get some incense. But then the books caught my eye, and then I got a book, and from there, everything took off. Because the books and approaching devotees gave me more happiness than smoking out. So, Jai, Nantarajya, Bhagavatam ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.